Most film scores are designed not to draw attention to themselves. They stay in the background like wallpaper, for decoration only. But exceptional movies feature unique and memorable characters or situations. Film composers like to match these elements with sounds that stick out, often from instruments you've never heard before. Connected to our film heritage is a virtual museum of obscure musical oddities. Take the contrabassoon, the monstrously huge cousin of the bassoon. Ennio Morricone uses it at the very beginning of his score for last year's Quentin Tarantino film, The Hateful Eight. I couldn't think of a more menacing sound, but the race to discover obscure instruments has been going on since the 1960s and before. The first use of the theremin was by Miklos Rosa way back in 1945 in his score for The Lost Weekend, where the weird sci-fi sound represents the siren call of the bottle. You've probably never heard of a cymbalum, but its strange Eastern European flavor is the perfect sound of international intrigue in the Ypcris file. The musical Saw captures the irony and insanity of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. All of these early instrumental discoveries eventually made their way into rock and pop, though I'm still waiting to hear a rock tune featuring the contrabassoon.
Support for this podcast comes from Carson Bank, member FDIC, one block west of Oliver on Douglas, serving the business and banking needs of the Wichita area for 130 years, now offering Android, Apple, and Samsung Mobile Pay. Carson Bank, we will always be here.
A topic here that's right up my alley, covering two things I love, music and definitely movies. As we welcome you to Musical Space, I'm Fletcher Powell here, of course, with Mark Foley. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Fletcher. How you doing?
Great. And we are hearing right now Ennio Morricone with The Hateful Eight. Talk a little bit more about the contrabassoon.
Oh, okay. It's this huge instrument. Imagine a bassoon, which is already low.
And big.
Big. Yeah, very big. And, you know, as you know, the bigger the instrument, the lower it can go. So composers, especially in the 19th century, wanted to make things bigger, lower, louder, higher. So every instrumental family has its kind of outliers that are, you know, of above and beyond. I don't know where the first use of the contrabassoon is, but actually, you know, I think I might. It might be Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, which supports the low parts in the last movement. So there you go. Check that out. But that's before movies, so sorry.
And as Morricone uses it here, of course, you say it creates a very menacing sound, which works quite well with the movie that he's scoring.
Yeah, it's low and buzzy and unwieldy, and you can't, I don't think you can play the instrument very fast. I'm sure there are people that can, but yeah, it's just, I don't know, more menacing than any synthesizer sound you could come up with. And I think Morricone is a perfect choice for the film score for this. I mean, Quentin Tarantino is like the ultimate film student, and he's created this beautiful postmodern sandbox where he can pick and choose from film history, and he had the means to hire the guy that did all these Sergio Leone, you know, spaghetti westerns in the 60s. So, yeah, so if he's going to do a Western, this is the perfect marriage.
And Morricone finally winning an Oscar for his score.
Yeah, finally, right? Yeah.
Something you mentioned just a few minutes ago that is really pretty shocking to me. I just didn't know that the first use of the theremin in movies was from The Lost Weekend, a movie about alcoholism.
Right, yeah. It's a very tragic movie. It's really well done. Yeah, all of these movies, they're not just interesting for the instruments they use, but they're really, really good movies. So this is a fun topic for me, too. Yeah, the theremin was used later in the 60s, 50s and 60s, whenever they needed a sci-fi sound. Listen to Bernard Herrmann's score for The Day the Earth Stood Still. Oh, man, that's like the coolest sound ever. And the theremin is, you know, a big part of that. He actually has two theremins in duet in some parts. But anyway, we're on The Lost Weekend. Here it's in this really wonderful kind of post-romantic context. So it fits in with the real lush harmonies of the full orchestra, kind of blends with the violins really well. but it's also unnatural and strange sounding, and so it's the kind of representing this unnatural draw that this character has to the bottle. Yeah, the theremin is one of the first electronic instruments. You could say the first synthesizer, really. Very weird instrument. It's it works on radio waves somehow, and it creates two radio waves. This is very technical, but just like with any radio, if you wave your hand in front of it, you can kind of alter how it receives. So one of these radio frequencies is being modulated by your hands that you're passing in front of an antenna. And that creates a interference pattern with the other radio wave, and you get this audible frequency. Well, I don't know if that made any sense at all.
From what I remember, it looks sort of like a metal box with an antenna.
Right.
And when you watch somebody play it, it looks like they're just sort of waving their hands over nothing, but as you said, it's interfering with those radio waves, and it creates that particular sound.
Right. Yeah. You don't touch the instrument. That's a very unique instrument, right? You don't touch it at all. You have to hold your body extremely still to play it. Otherwise, you'll lose your pitch and stuff. If you're close to a computer, look up Clara Rockmore on YouTube. She's the virtuoso theremin player.
One of the more iconic film scores, I think, uses another instrument that I rarely hear anywhere else. The score from The Third Man and The Zither.
Right, yeah. The Third Man, one of my favorite all-time movies. This is an amazing movie. If you haven't seen it, just go watch it right now.
And I
you
second
can come
that.
Back. Yeah.
No question, The Third Man is a great, truly great movie.
Yeah, top 10 list for sure. Because they took all these risks with the storytelling, right? It wasn't just, you know, it wasn't weird or anything, but they really, really went far with the imagery and also with the music. They were working on this film in post-war Vienna, which is where the film is set. And they're wondering about what kind of music to use. And while they were, you know, producing this film, there was this street musician. His name is Anton Karas, and he's playing this weird instrument called the zither, which is held in the lap. It's like a big guitar, but it's got about 30 strings on it. And you're strumming it. Some of the strings are melody strings, some are bass strings, some are accompanimental strings. So it's a very full sound, but it's also really, really sad and mournful, and it really supports the film in a way I think a full orchestra wouldn't be able to, because it just focuses you in so well on the drama of the story and the sense of loss. You know, there's love lost, but then also the loss of working with post-war Vienna and all the things they had to give up. So it's perfect. It's one of the perfect scores.
Going from something I was familiar with, the zither, in The Third Man, to something, as you mentioned a few moments ago, I may have never heard of, and I haven't, the cymbalom. Tell me about this, Mark.
It's actually a Eastern European hammer dulcimer, if that helps at all. It's a big, like a trapezoid that you sit in front of and hit the strings with a hammer. There are many, many strings on it. And so there's a lot of sympathetic vibration going on, and it just sounds like nothing else. There's nothing that comes close to the sound of a cymbalum. The composer John Barry, I think, was the first film composer to use this in a spy movie, but once he made this discovery, everybody was using cymbalum in spy movies. You'll hear it right away. It'll trigger something in your brain. Remember this movie, The Ipcress File?
Sure.
Yeah. It's the ultimate. And I love the Eastern European sound because it kind of, you know, it becomes synonymous with international intrigue and, you know, just the bizarre situations that being a spy will put you into.
Another interesting sound, and maybe I have bad ears, but one that I sometimes get confused with the theremin, depending on how it's being played. You mentioned the musical Saw in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Right, yeah, used as a folk instrument. But then watching the film, it comes in on the end credits, and I think just captures perfectly the, you know, the sadness and the insanity and just the irony of the story. The ending is not a happy ending. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the soundtrack uses musical Saw and also wine glasses. You know, you dip your finger in water and rub them on the wine glasses. So it's otherworldly. It puts you in a different place.
Again, it's the use of these instruments that take you somewhere that conventional instruments just can't do in a
right.
musical score.
Yeah.
Going to one of my very, very favorite soundtracks. It captures the tone of the movie perfectly. Carter Burwell's score for Fargo uses a particular kind of violin.
Right, yeah. Carter Burwell was, I think, the only person that writes music for the Coen Brothers. I don't know of any counterexample, but yeah, he did all the great Coen Brothers scores. And, you know, growing up in Minnesota, this is really dear to my heart, the movie Fargo. Yeah, when I was growing up, we actually had that Minnesota accent that they're making fun of. And also my aunt is a violinist, and she plays this instrument. This instrument is called the Hardanger fiddle. It's a Norwegian folk instrument, and boy, it'd be cool if we could find a picture of one, because it's very ornate. It's like a violin, but with lots of carvings and dragons and lots of decoration on it. It's definitely a folk instrument. Has some extra strings that vibrate sympathetically. So it doesn't have the like rich, warm, romantic sound of you know what we think of as a violin. It's more of a very cold, may I say,
yes,
folk instrument.
Well, it reflects the coldness that we see in the Minnesota winter.
Right. Yeah. So we're watching these really, really bleak scenes of just like whiteout from the snow, and then you hear this no vibrato violin sound just kind of underlying this desolation.
It's essentially perfect for the score.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Going from what seems to be a relatively simple score to one of those epic giant scores that we get from epic giant movies. You
right.
talk about Howard Shore and his Lord of the Rings score and a very particular kind of tuba.
Yeah. Is it a tuba or is it a French horn? We don't know. But if you know anything about opera, the biggest and hugest opera composer is Richard Wagner. He did everything big, and he invented all these instruments because he just wanted everything bigger and badder. So he wanted French horns that could sound low and big And so he created this tuba. They call it the Wagner tuba, but it's really like an overgrown French horn. It's really big. It fills up your whole lap like a tuba would, but it's actually played by horn players. And the sound is really, really, guttural and primitive and ancient sounding. It sounds like maybe like horns that somebody would blow on when they're about to go to war in, you know, some medieval time or something. I think it's perfect for Howard Shore's score for Lord of the Rings.
And then let's round things out by really coming full circle. We started with Ennio Morricone. Let's end up with Ennio Morricone because, as you say, he's kind of the king of strange instruments in musical scores.
Right, yeah. The story I've heard is that, you know, these spaghetti westerns he did with Sergio Leone, they didn't have any money at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very low budget, which kind of adds to the effect, right? He didn't have the budget for an orchestra like most movies would. So he had to make do, and he just really ran with it. So I think what we're going to hear is pretty much as weird a collection of instruments as you could possibly put together. Starts with Jew's harp, then there's a whistler, and the whistler is kind of a thread that goes through all these Sergio Leone scores, because. The story is always about a mystic loner who wanders through and gets involved in these things. So the loneliness of the whistler really makes sense. You hear harmonica in the background, then ocarina, which is kind of like a folk recorder kind of instrument.
Yeah.
Some people call it the potato pipe. Orchestra bells, and then electric guitar.
On top of it all.
Right,
Well, cool. We'll close out there with Ennio Morricone. All of these scores certainly worth listening to, and I'd say every single one of these movies absolutely worth watching. You have a great list here, Mark.
Oh, thanks. There's at least like 3 top 10 movies just in this list, so I hope that's fun for you guys.
Yeah, it's absolutely been fun for me. So thanks, Mark, as always, for being here.
Thank you, Fletcher. Always fun.
And for KMUW, I'm Fletcher Powell.